Podcast One Sports presents Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. Every Tuesday, you can hear Jack Harbaugh.
We're going to attack this day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
Jim Harbaugh.
What the hell's going on around here?
And JT Rogan share their stories from on and off the field. Past guests include John Harbaugh, ESPN's Adam Schefter, and Pardon My Takes, PFT and Big Cat. So don't miss an episode of Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. Every Tuesday, exclusively on PodcastOne.com and the new Podcast One app. Just a sample of what's coming to Podcast One Sports.
And before we get going with our friend Jen Kirkman, I've got some business we want to get to. BetterHelp is offering licensed professional counselors specializing in issues such as stress, anxiety, relationships, depression, addictions, eating disorders, sleeping, trauma, anger, family conflicts, LGBT matters, grief, religion, self-esteem, betterhelp.com/Dr. Drew. You can connect with a licensed professional in a safe, private environment. This way you can get your help on your own time, your own pace. Just imagine, no more explaining why you have to leave work or leave your family. And if you're not happy with your counselor, you can request a new one at any time. No waiting list. You'll be communicating again within 24 hours. Best of all, is affordable prices as low as $35 a week, and this means a month of online therapy often costs less than a single traditional face-to-face session. And for our listeners, age 18 and above, BetterHelp is offering 7 days of free counseling so you can experience the service and determine if it's right for you. Just go to betterhelp.com/drdrew, fill out a questionnaire to help them assess your needs, and match you with a counselor that you will love. You need to be over 18. And pricing starts again as low as $35 per week, billed monthly. Members get unlimited communication via 4 modes, text, chat, phone, and video for a flat monthly fee. It's available worldwide, and they have counselors who can serve in 17 languages. It's a great value. It's secure. It's confidential. And you can cancel within 7 days, and you will not be charged. It is betterhelp.com/Dr. Drew.
Dr. Drew podcast. Check out the Swinging Sounds. Check out the podcast at drdrew.com. What else do I need to promote? Oh, the keep supporting the people that support these podcasts. We
absolutely
appreciate it
very much. And rate and review on iTunes. Help us climb those charts. And
we do
check
appreciate
out
it.
Check out the new Podcast One app. You can watch Drew in 360 VR.
Oh,
all
that's
of his glory.
Right. Oh my God.
Yeah, we are. Am I on camera right now?
Jen Kirkman's here and on camera. Welcome.
I got my hair blown out for this.
It's very lovely.
Thank you. I just got off a plane and I went straight to the dry bar.
Which reminds me, I had essentially radial keratotomy like 2 weeks ago. I was supposed to get LASIK. Hang on, I got to put these drops in. I literally have to put
them. Oh my God, you're so good at that.
And I had was going to get LASIK, but turns out I have a thin cornea, so they couldn't do LASIK. So they go, we have this other procedure called PRK. No big deal. It's a little more involved there, but you know, we just take the cornea off and then laser the inside. But it's no big deal. You have an uncomfortable weekend, maybe. I mean, 2 weeks of hell. 2 weeks of hell.
Was your eyes like burning?
Oh, still kind of burning. And now my vision's clearing. It's wonderful. It's wonderful because I have like normalized vision. I was getting blind, which is like very exciting. But it's been rough.
It's been painful to be around you.
Yeah, it's been rough.
When did the glasses come off, though? Or do you wear them?
I'm going to wear them always, but they're not going to fully correct this eye, my right eye, so I can have better reading.
Yeah. You
know, so, and that's fine. It's what I want. And so I can, like, when I take my glasses off now, I see pretty darn well. Remarkable, frankly.
Did they put you under for that?
No. Totally awake. Totally awake. They put like this, like essentially a round knife over your eye and push it into your eyeball and then take off your cornea and then laser it until you smell it burning. And then they go, okay, next eye. It's like, oh. And they've infused this super frozen water on it till I felt like my head was going to explode.
And feel the pain or is it just
you
the
see the kaleidoscopic? You watch the guy doing all this stuff to you. It's the weirdest thing in the world. And I'm really pretty good with pain and procedures and stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, how does the average person tolerate this?
Yeah, it's that ooky pain too. Ooky.
Visceral pain.
Visceral, that's
yeah.
good. Well, but they don't numb your eye?
Oh, they numb the eye completely, yes. The eye is numb, but you are totally awake.
Oh, don't
half milligram Xanax. So I took, and then I was like, oh boy, here we go.
Okay, so you can take a little something. Oof.
Yeah, but you're awake. You're quite awake. But anyway, I thank Dr. Celasil for restoring my vision. It's really kind of remarkable. Really remarkable. I can wear sunglasses without wearing contacts. Very cool.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. But I can't. But I've been pretty miserable. These poor guys.
You look like you're crying.
Well, I just put a bunch of drops in.
I know it's cool.
But
though.
You just left a silent retreat. Tell me about that.
Oh my God, it was wonderful. I have to tell you, it was exactly the way. I'm going to tell you what I learned from it. My codependency came up.
Wait, before you, my codependency is mobilizing too. Tell everybody where they can find you and stuff first.
Oh, jenkirkman.com. Yeah. I'm a comedian.
And then I'm on your podcast.
You're on my podcast. It's called I Seem Fun, The Diary of Jen Kirkman Podcast. Yeah. I don't know when that's going to come out.
Check out the Netflix specials.
Two Netflix specials. My latest one's called Just Keep Living. I really like that one.
The other one's fine.
It's called I'm Going to Die Alone and I Feel Fine. It's about not having children.
It's a very funny episode. Very funny stand-up.
Episode.
A stand-up. I mean, what do you call it?
Special.
Special. Very funny special.
I concur, by the way.
Yeah,
I like that
one. I know you may not.
I like them
I
both.
Do, but you know how it is with comics. We're like, don't watch our old stuff.
I like that one.
And I have two books, and I'm...
When I fell in love with Ken was in Drunk History. Drunk History. So check her out there.
Ken.
Jen.
No, and I'm going on tour all over America starting next week.
Oh,
and
wow.
And all new material. If you haven't seen me, if you've seen my specials, you won't be sitting for
any big cities?
You've already heard. All the big ones. 22 cities.
Oh my God.
Starting on the San Francisco, Seattle, Vancouver, Portland, Boston, New York City,
check
Brooklyn,
out your website
DC,
for
Chicago,
dates,
Philly.
Right? Just Google Jen Kirkman and it'll come up.
Yeah, it'll all come up. Yeah. The Houston Show, donating a third of my proceeds in merchandise to the Hurricane Relief Fund.
Good.
A great person.
Yes.
So yesterday was my birthday, and I decided I've always wanted to go on a silent retreat, but I don't want to go on those ones where you're meditating for 10 hours because I don't want to lose my mind.
What happens here?
It's this beautiful couple. They have one in Assisi, Italy, you know, like St. Francis of Assisi. They go to Bali a lot and lead retreats. So they have this beautiful house in Northern California that is a hermitage, whatever that means, a silent retreat, whatever. And it can hold maybe like, you're in just like a big house.
It's look up hermitage, dictionary.com. Gary.
H-E-R-M.
Gary, look up hermitage.
Hermitage.
Hermitage in France. But go ahead.
So anyway, you go there and you stay in this house. And there's other people there.
Definition. Just what does it mean?
You think he's going to be that fast?
Yeah. Oh, he's fast. He'll write it on my board. He won't even tell me. Go ahead.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So you go and you stay and you have your own room, obviously. And the dwelling of a
hermit, especially. You can get on the mic there.
Especially when small or remote. And then the second definition is a major art museum in St. Petersburg, Russia.
That's the Hermitage. Yeah, that's it.
Well, I don't know why they call it.
Dwelling of a hermit. So it's really a retreat.
It's a dwelling.
Yeah, it's a dwelling.
Retreat.
Like it's like where, what's one of the guys, the ring? What's the name of the?
Hobbit.
But yeah, the Hobbit would live.
So these people live there in their own house. And then there's a second property that's like maybe a 6-bedroom house.
Okay.
Big, beautiful kitchen. So you go, you stay. There's a meditation for 45 minutes in the morning at 9 a.m. and one at 7 p.m. and for half an hour. And that's it. That's all they expect you to do.
Otherwise, you have to shut up, not talk?
No talking at all. You can talk like if you do a one-on-one kind of meditation session with them. Obviously, you walk in and you chat a little bit. But that's it. You don't talk to the other people. And what they say is when you're just getting silent with your heart and your spirit – you know, give yourself the gift of silence. Give other people. It's their
retreat.
Is it
weird not talking to other people you don't
know? No. I'm telling you.
Because the expectation is not there that you're going to talk. So
it's it's beautiful. So you're in the kitchen.
Do you have anybody you wanted to talk to?
No. No. I was like, this is like all a bunch of like earthy older women.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the dude comes and he's snoring during the meditation. I'm like, can men ever control themselves?
No.
This is just like all of a sudden just like the veto. Like just
everything.
This energy comes there. We're like, oh, God.
That is funny.
You can't sit still for 2 seconds.
Your next thing needs to be about men, women stuff because you have so many interesting things
happening
that way.
I feel like men aren't there yet where they can – white men can laugh at black men making fun of them. But
Wait. White men can laugh at black men making fun of them, but black men make fun of white men for very different reasons than women.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I don't think men are there yet where they like when women make fun of them. They're not laughing. Does that make sense?
It depends what you're going after. If it's castrating, because that's our defense. If it's if it's emasculating in some way, we're very
on
guard.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what emasculates.
But if it rings true about our core being, then
it's more just that. Like all of a sudden, you could I never could hear when someone was tiptoeing down to the kitchen at night, and all of a sudden the guy shows up, door slammed. It's like
that's funny.
Yeah, but you never know. Not all men do. That's like, of course not. Anyway, but what I loved about it is I'm always traveling. And in my worst, I hate small talk. I hate how's your day going so far. I hate mindless.
Yeah.
When people ask you three times how you're doing because they forgot that they just asked.
Yeah, yeah.
Checking into a hotel. What are you here for? Why do you need to fucking know?
Yeah.
Questions.
Yeah, especially when you're traveling.
Chit-chat.
Just energy is like, who wants to expend it?
This was beautiful to have that Oh, I'm going to go down in the kitchen and make toast. Oh, I have to worry about it. No one's going to ask me anything. No one's going to say. You can feel the urge in yourself to just comment because we're nervous.
Yeah.
So you just want to go, smells good. But you can't. You're going to bother them.
That's nice.
Yeah, and it's a cool feeling.
It's weird, though. Is it weird?
No, I'm telling you, it's the most natural feeling in the world. It was people just being quiet and doing their own thing. And a lot of times we weren't all even in the same room. Mostly I was alone. But then after a couple of days, it was just and I found it easy to not talk because I talk for a living. Mm. A lot of people said to me, oh, I don't think I could do it. And I was like, huh.
How many days?
I did it four nights, 3 days. And I didn't – there's no TV. There's Wi-Fi, so I checked email sometimes. I had still had work to do. But I didn't listen to anything. I've always got a podcast playing. I'm puttering around the house. And the last couple of weeks, I've been so fucking stressed out because I don't feel like there's been 1 minute of silence. I fall asleep to podcasts. I hear this. I hear that. And I realized I need to rearrange my life so that I have some silence during the day. Like, I don't have it ever. Not in the shower. I'm always taking in information.
Now, I did your podcast, and we talked a lot about on that podcast about the internal dialogue and the buzzing and the panicking and the catastrophizing and all that stuff. And yes, for people like that, it's important to sort of attend your biology.
Yeah.
Now, I have a weird thing I do because I'm wired like you a little bit, a lot actually. And I can listen to podcasts and work out and go into like a down state or run and go into a really like, I'm sort of out of body almost some of the time.
Yeah.
And I can hear the podcast. But it has to be really a thinking podcast where I'm sort of have to pay attention. I have to focus.
Yep.
Yeah. So that I can understand sort of calms me down. But otherwise, if you don't attend to sort of calming yourself regularly, you pick up momentum.
Well, even if I was listening to like something stressful, like it doesn't really affect me. I mean, I could be listening to a guru talk about meditating,
right.
And it would still stress me out if there was no silence in my head.
Okay, like
it was
so you need silence.
I just need at least just. I would realize I just even 10 minutes. I mean, I was just
for F's sake.
Yeah, for F's sake. So, but I really loved it, and I would do it again for sure. And
I'm just flashing on podcast. Did I hear you on Eliza Schlesinger's, or she on yours?
I was on hers. Yeah,
you were on hers. Okay, that's what I.
I don't remember. That was a while ago.
I just happened to pick. I have to listen to it for some reason. I like both these guys.
But I would recommend this experience I had to anyone because I found it easy to not watch TV. I found it easy to. It just was like, you know, I don't have to weigh in on everything. I can read about crazy shit going on, and I don't have to weigh in and go, I agree or I don't agree.
No,
or,
you can just kind of be with it.
And then you realize your own narcissism. I'm like, oh, my God, the Houston thing. What are people going to think? I'm not tweeting anything about it. I'm not saying donate here.
Well,
and it's
that,
like,
now
Jen.
That's I'm going to get into a little bit, which is that there's a hidden liability codependency. And it's sort of a reverse narcissism.
Yes.
It's a weird thing where you grandiosely preoccupy at other people and their well-being, but it you have to watch out that it's not about you or your pain that you're actually managing.
Pain that you're actually managing.
Well,
tell me more.
Yeah, me in therapy, I realized I had trouble differentiating somebody else's pain from my own. I didn't realize that was happening. But if I saw somebody else in
pain. That's in the ACA book I was telling you about.
Yeah. Okay. When I saw somebody else in pain, I had to rescue them from their pain. And I didn't realize that it was actually my pain I was stopping.
Mm.
Okay? And I really separated it. Strangely enough, I had this very vivid experience on a plane.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever see that movie In America about that Irish family that came to America and they had a
shot?
Well, that father's pain, I was able to watch the movie on a plane, and all of a sudden I started sobbing. And I was like, I was losing it. It was like one of those like embarrassing crying spells. And I was like, but it was not mine. I was appreciating his. And it was one of the first times that I was really able to deeply separate it for myself.
And you really don't think it was your own pain coming up. It was
definitely
I
could tell the difference.
Interesting.
I could tell, and it made me realize how muddled that had all been for me most of my life.
Interesting.
And that I had to really be careful about that and make sure when I was caring about somebody else, I was really specifically able to feel and see their pain and not have it mixed up with mine. It's a weird thing when you're codependent. Well, our friends at Blonde Galore do one thing, and they do one thing better than anybody else, and that, of course, is creating 100% custom window treatments built to your precise measurements, down to every last detail. And not only do they fit perfectly, but they look great. They have it all. Blinds, shades, shutters, drapes, everything. And at blindsgalore.com, they have covered over 2 million windows and counting. I've got them. We've got them all over the Corolla network. You will save a ton compared to the big box stores, and you will get custom product made for your window specifically. And from start to finish, measuring, picking out the perfect window covering, installing it, they have a team of in-house experts at Blind Galore that are there to guide you every step of the way. They send you fabric. It's all free shipping. They help you. If you're not happy, they keep working with you. You work hard enough. Blinds Galore makes it easy to get the custom blinds and shades you've always wanted in your home. Check out blindsgalore.com and let them know Dr. Drew sent you. That is blindsgalore.com. I'm pleased to tell you about BetterHelp. They allow you to connect with a licensed professional counselor in a safe, private environment. No more explaining why you have to leave work early, no fighting traffic. And if you're not happy with your counselor, you can request a new one at any time. No waiting list. You'll be communicating in 24 hours. And best of all, this is affordable. Pricing start at $35 a week. This means a month of online therapy can cost less than a single face-to-face session traditionally. And for our listeners ages 18 and over, BetterHelp is offering 7 days of free counseling so you can experience the service and determine if it's right for you. Just go to BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/Dr. Drew. Fill out a questionnaire, and that will help them assess your needs and match you with a counselor who you are going to love. That is BetterHelp.com/Dr. Drew to get started today. Need to be 18 years or older to work with that counselor. Pricing starts as low as $35 a week, billed monthly, and members will get unlimited communication via 4 modes, text, chat, phone, and video for that flat monthly fee. It's available worldwide, so wherever you are, you can get to your BetterHelp counselor. That is BetterHelp.com/Dr. Drew.
We talked a little bit about it in the little retreat, just in terms of meditating, like we're always putting things out there, and a lot of things is calm your mind, and
well,
this is going to your heart,
but we haven't,
and just feel.
Yes, which you're probably pretty good at, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but the spin in your head that we talked about in your podcast,
yeah,
that's where it gets out of control, and that has a grandiose quality to it. Because it starts...
And it doesn't feel attached to my feelings, and I don't know if that's good or bad.
Bad.
See, I think...
That's the problem.
I think at one point it was...
Or it was attached or it wasn't?
I think it was, and now it's just moved up, but I don't think... I think it would have moved out.
Explain to me.
Like, if I'm spinning, like I was telling you on my podcast, like, oh, you know what, I think people think I'm crazy, and I don't know, yeah, I'm probably a bad person. I'm not feeling...
Oh, just those feelings, those random.
Yeah,
just I'm a bad person, nothing else.
I don't feel sad or bad about myself when I'm saying that.
So it's disconnected from feelings.
It's a disconnect, I guess, but I
now,
do feel as though I felt those feelings, but they weren't named that.
Now, are they feelings that are spinning around somewhere you just can't feel them?
They might be. I mean, I get, you know, at this retreat, we did this meditation thing, and when people say nice things to me, I just started crying because she was like, you have this beautiful energy, you have this lightness. Like, I'm sorry to be weird.
You have to own that.
And she said, when you walked in the room, when you first came to the retreat, like, I just felt like, oh, I want to know this person. Like, there's lightness there. You could be really good at helping others.
And what'd you feel?
My heart was jumping, leaping.
Hurt?
I felt...
Hurt?
No, happy. I felt it. I knew in my being she was right. And I started to cry because I know it's true. But
is it because I want to kind of nail you down here. Is it because you were disconnected from that part of yourself for so long, or you didn't appreciate it, or you didn't nourish it or take care of it?
Like you said, I didn't know.
Didn't know it was there.
And then...
So that's trauma.
But then
that's
like
trauma.
A minute later, once I'm not in that,
yeah,
the brain goes,
okay,
well, that woman's a bullshit artist. Okay.
Okay. So... This is what I'm always lecturing. I don't want your mom to get mad that I'm playing
She's
therapist with you.
Okay.
All right. Why not? Come on now.
She doesn't know about this.
So, is that I always say to people is like, connect to others, connect to self.
Right.
It's the other that gives us access to ourself.
Right.
And when you disconnect from the other, you start disconnecting from yourself again. And then you start diminishing the impact of what she was saying. You're literally like,
yes,
you're like separating from it and like demeaning it and taking, you know, pushing it away.
Yeah.
This New York conversation we had, that was on your podcast.
Yeah.
I was all muddling together in my head.
Yeah.
I told Jen that she should go to New York this Christmas. And I feel like that's connecting.
Yeah. Well, when I work with my, and I don't like to say what programs I'm in because I don't want to be the spokesperson for them, but I'm not drugs or alcohol, but I do a lot of codependency, 12-step work.
Okay.
And my friends from those programs, they really reflect back to me how I've helped them. And
how you've helped them.
Yeah, and how they helped me. And I see their pain and mine and theirs, and that helps me so much to go, well, wait a minute, if they're not a bad person, then I can't be. Does that make sense? Like when I see someone...
Yes, but listen.
Oh, yeah.
There's so much trauma in that I'm a bad person stuff.
No, I know, I know,
it's shame.
It's shame.
And shame is trauma.
I know.
And shame is pushes you down.
When does it go away? Because I work on it in therapy and working on it in 12 stuff. Like, I don't feel like, God, how much
could
I have?
How weird is it? But how weird... Oh, it sort of have to be... I would think about it this way. And I don't know this is for sure accurate.
Like
but I'm
I don't want it to get worse.
No.
I feel like I've been through worse.
No. But this woman that connected to you and made you feel that connected to your good self or bad self is okay. Your bad self is okay is what you
No, there was no bad self.
No bad self went away. That's exactly what has to happen. You have to spend more time in that space where there's no bad self.
I do in my relationships from 12 step.
And what happens is that other thing just kind of closes. That trauma space sort of... You know.
It's, I guess it's sort of like a practice in a way.
It's sort of like, for me, I can tell you what happened to me.
Yeah.
I had sort of a traumatic dead space. It was like emptiness, and I would fall into it in therapy. And at first, it was like horrifying.
What do you mean you would fall into it in therapy?
I would just suddenly find myself in like a fugue state almost. It was just like...
It's like no feeling, no...
I just know nothing.
That,
it was horrible.
I relate to that. Yeah.
And those empty spots, I realized, were causing my panic and all these other things, and they were just left over from trauma. And it's something that a guy named Alan Shore calls traumatic dead spots. It's like you're dead. And I realized that those were things I was avoiding, but with the connection with a good therapist, I was able to tolerate going into them, and pretty soon they just sort of closed up. They just sort of healed. It's a healing.
Yeah. Yeah, because I felt this darkness last year. I was like, I think there's stuff I have to look at. And I was like, what could it be? It seems
so
scary.
It's just a feeling state. It's not a cognitive thing.
Yeah,
it's
and then I was like, oh, like I kept thinking, I'm going to, you know, because when we say trauma, like I wasn't.
No.
It's not abuse. It's not molestation.
It's not any sort of kind of trauma. It's not a thought or an explicit memory. It's just tolerating more regularly certain feeling states.
Yeah, I think since I was a kid, tolerating feelings was terrifying.
That's right. That's what they didn't give you enough of, was the ability to regulate your feelings, and that was traumatic, and separating from parts of yourself, and you may have a bad self and a good self, and you got to let that empty...
Bad self and a good self. Okay, that's a great way to look at it.
Yeah, and the good self is a little bit of a... has a false quality to it, I'm sure, from your sense. You probably feel like it's a little false, but even though it isn't.
That's the feeling I get when I go, I'm probably a sociopath.
Right.
Okay, so the false self is an expression I've heard, right?
Yeah. False self.
What does it mean in psychology?
Well, it's something to do to cover for narcissistic emptiness, frankly. It's a way of getting what you need from the world.
Well, that's a sociopath. That's what I just...
No, sociopaths... You manipulate and use the world to get what they need.
I feel like also the false self, could it be...
You're the farthest thing from a sociopath. It's like, stop
it. Wouldn't that's what a sociopath would...
No, I know sociopaths. Okay. They make me feel a certain way.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Well, do you think the false self is also doing stuff to get, like you said, to get what you need from the world, but to get what you need from yourself?
It is, but it's a trickle, and it's not the real thing. The real thing is more spontaneous and holistic and integrated and all that stuff. And so that whatever happened to you there in that retreat, I think was a real thing when she said gave you all that stuff that you were fully in it. You were fully there. There was all of Jen present.
Well, you know what was interesting is my friends and program have said that to me, and I think, oh, that's nice, and I believe them, and... Well, of course, Kimberly says that because I helped her with something.
Yeah,
and this woman doesn't know
you.
Me from dick squat. And
right.
I walked in and she said, I'm sorry, but there's this great presence there.
And that's all the other stuff you do with your friends is about thinking.
Yeah.
This woman made you experience something.
Yes.
And the experience is what counts. Experience is what you need to spend time doing, is having that experience to heal what's – you haven't had enough of that.
Now, let me tell you, this is where I go, because I'm very a Catholic girl. I don't think I'm better than anyone else. And then at the same time, after I had that experience.
What, with the woman?
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm going through the house. And there's the guy. He's got his iPod on. I'm like, look at him. He can't fucking take it. And that woman over there, she didn't get called. You know, I'm special. It goes there. The adult noticed me. I'm special. That's what I wanted growing up.
Okay.
Treat me like an adult. I'm special. So I was walking around thinking for 2 seconds.
All right.
I'm special. These people aren't. And it's like, well, I don't have to turn it to that either. Like, we all.
Yeah. I think that's a developmental thing.
Do you think that's me not being able to connect with the...
Nope. I think it's you acting out some developmental stuff you needed and you didn't get.
Ah, okay. Because I was wondering if it was a way to almost not go into how emotional it felt to feel good about
myself.
Some of
it might be that. Some of it might be that. But it's also that wish fulfillment of what you needed when you were a kid.
Yeah.
And you didn't get, and you're just doing it.
Now, see, if my mom heard this, she'd be like, what do you mean I did this? I did that.
Let's not make another victim here. She was great, whatever.
But I think for the listener, I do think there's just some children that they're going to – no matter what happened, someone dropped a fork.
They're going to need more.
They're traumatized for life.
They're going to need more. That's right. Some kids are sensitive. What they call the dandelion versus the orchid, I think they call it.
I can be blown away?
No. The dandelions, you can't destroy them. They keep coming back through the cracks in the cement. But the orchid, if you don't treat it just right, it doesn't do very well.
So, I thought of the opposite. Okay.
Yeah. I think that's what they call it. But there's lots of theories about it.
An orchid.
Yeah.
There was orchids everywhere in that room. Isn't that crazy?
There you go.
She had me. That's interesting. That's cool.
She's telling you. She knew you were an orchid.
It's very strange. I mean, but all this stuff, I worry, how long it's going to take.
Stop it. For God's sake. It must be so tiring to be in your head, my dear.
I guess it is. Oh, it is. But
you're
God.
Kind of addicted to all that. That's the ACA stuff.
Now, here's the thing. I don't think, I won't be funny if I figure it all out. Because you can always recall.
That's what all my drug addicts say.
Ah, that's bullshit.
Right.
And you know who said, Elizabeth Gilbert had a great thing in a book about creativity. She's like, if you think.
Who's Elizabeth Gilbert?
You know, Eat, Pray, Love, all that.
Oh, yeah.
She's like, if you think you're doing anything creative now, like with that drug-addled drunk person running the show, you're going to be fucking kidding.
Yeah.
You know, that's not how she wrote it in her book, but that's Boston Jen explaining it. She's like, what are you doing there?
Did you grow up in Boston?
Right outside of it.
Where?
In the suburbs.
Where?
Needham.
Needham, Mass.
Yeah.
That's sort of near Framingham, isn't it?
Yeah.
I feel like when I'm going down the Mass Pike, I'd see the Needham.
Oh, yeah, you guys. Muzzy Ford exit. right next to Newton Wellesley.
Yeah, Newton. That's what's by Newton.
Yeah. It's a beautiful, very wealthy now. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
And did you go to college out there? Did you go to college?
I went to Boston. I mean, Boston. What am I talking? I went to Emerson College.
Emerson.
Not a good school when I went. Now I guess it's a good school.
Still a lot of Emerson types doing quite well out in this town.
Sure.
A lot.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's different if you work in production behind the scenes.
A lot of Emerson
There's a
types.
Lot of opportunity to be set up.
Yeah.
The stand-up comedy was not a thing when I went there.
But still, it seems like a lot of people kind of came out of that zone.
You know what it is? I think it's a self-starter kind of school. It's not NYU where you're hooked up with an agent. You know what's interesting?
What's the name? The guy did King World was from Emerson, right? The guy that built that giant building on Sunset.
Oh, yeah. I forget his name.
I forget,
Muchnick?
Too.
No. He's there.
Muchnick is the guy from Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, Max Muchnick from Will and Grace. That's
okay.
But the psychology of the professors maybe would have been fascinating to you. I was such a, I don't know if it's like a goody two shoes, but I was this person that thought adults, like if an adult said something, like in one way I was rebellious and in another I was like, well, I guess they're right.
It must be so, yeah.
Yeah. And the teachers were bitter. Not all of them. I'm still really close with my old dance teacher. But some of them just were like, look, you're not going to make a career of this acting stuff. And it was like, it wasn't from a, guys, this isn't about fame. You could be very happy being a teacher.
They were like, look, I tried hard and I didn't
and
get there.
And I didn't. And it's such a Boston thing, too.
Yeah. New England generally.
It was very like, teachers were all victims.
There was a drama teacher, acting teacher at Amherst College, who played the original Big Daddy on Broadway in Cat in the Hot Tin Roof. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
And then the guy that played the White Knight ended up teaching at my college. The guy died recently. He was also in 30 Rock. Help me.
Dick Gregory? No.
White Knight.
The character in 30 Rock?
Yes. He
White
played
Knight.
The big boss. He was the...
Alec Baldwin?
Baldwin's boss, I think it was. I think he played.
Oh, okay. All I could think of is the ballet White Knights.
It was really interesting guys, but they were all like same kind of attitude. Like, but unless you are an academic, if you approach it academically, then you'll be fine because this is an academic pursuit, you know.
I still this day don't like Shakespeare. I don't understand why it's thought to be superior. I just don't jibe. Is it jibe or jive? Either way, I don't bat with it. Like the language, I don't care. I just don't care.
Yeah.
I don't, it doesn't interest me. And I feel like at my school, it was like, oh, Shakespeare, that's what we do here. And
that's
I was
hysterical.
Like, well,
no, not Rip Torn. God damn it. He with the
Ken Howard?
Ken Howard. There we go. Thank you very much.
God, I must have lost some brain cells on this retreat. I don't know who that is.
Ken Howard, you'd recognize me. Maybe show a picture
if
up there,
I saw
Gary.
Him from the 30 Rock.
The 30 Rock, you recognize me. You might recognize him more from the White Knight thing when he was the basketball coach and this whatever.
Do you know Alec Baldwin personally?
There he is. That's Ken Howard.
Nope, don't recognize him.
Really?
I got this weird...
Yeah. Met Alec many times.
Okay.
Why?
I was just reading about I was just reading about him in the New York Magazine, and I root for the guy. I like him. I have a theory. I want to run by you.
I think he's a brilliant actor too. Like crazy. Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
His book I'm enjoying too.
Yeah. And I just think he's a great guy. He's smart as shit too, by the way.
I thought of this because I was just reading about him, like, you know, marrying a younger woman, blah, blah. I was talking at this job I had over the summer, this writing job, with a bunch of grown-ups, and we were talking about where were we on 9/11, and a lot of us were in New York, and this girl...
Were you in New York during it?
Mm-hmm.
Did you have to witness all that?
Mm-hmm.
You're saying it like you're disconnected from it.
No, I...
Where were you?
22nd and 6th Avenue.
Holy shit.
Just far enough away to not feel part of it.
Okay.
Like in terms of, I mean, I could smell everything, and it was...
You could see people jumping?
No.
Okay.
That's too far away, but I watched the, like, it's not like you got a clear view of it, but you could see suddenly the knot in the sky. It I went back inside because I was like, it just was sort of, there was this thing where, you know how nowadays you can make something about yourself, like on Twitter, someone dies, you're like, I met them, and, okay. There was something about 9/11 where I think, like, instinctively, if you were not in that building or around those blocks, you couldn't make it about you and how you were feeling.
Right.
I mean, I had PTSD for a while, I think.
Yes.
But in that moment, it was like,
this isn't about me.
This isn't about me.
Right.
But it wasn't like I was experiencing feelings. Interestingly enough, the only person I know that didn't drink that day, I was in this hyper-vigilant, we might have to get out of here.
Sure.
I don't want to be drunk. But we were talking about where we were in 9/11, and this girl who's 26 was like, I was in school, and just like the energy, just like, we don't care that you're in school. Like, the grown-ups are talking. And then I started thinking about, I've been meeting with a lot of male writers in Hollywood and female, but to work on this project with. And a couple of them were in their 40s, and we're talking about dating like women in their 20s. And I was thinking, how can you not respect, but romantically, like, in your brain, get it up for someone who, if you were talking to your 25-year-old girlfriend about 9/11, and she's like, I was in fifth grade, like, wouldn't you feel like a, I call it, like, late-in-life pedophilia? Like,
yes.
Like, it's...
If you don't, it has to cross their minds.
I mean, you have to have been menstruating.
If the guy... Well, you're talking about the men or the women?
Well, men don't menstruate. Dr.
Yeah.
Drew.
I know. What are you talking about then?
I'm saying, ask yourself, was my girlfriend menstruating on 9/11? Then she might be age appropriate. She'd have to have her period online. That's what I'm saying.
That's hysterical.
But I do think there's something about when you can... We have this major event that maybe other generations didn't have, where you could go, where were you on ..
Yeah.
I mean, JFK, but there might have been a little gap in the 70s, 80s. Right? That, to me, is creep-tastic. But I don't know why I just thought of it. I think it's the Alec Baldwin thing.
Yeah. Well,
not that
men will shut their brains off and just turn their eyes on, and that's it. And then their penis works.
No,
but
they
will not make
theory.
But that will not make them happy in a relationship. Hey, I'm not sure if you guys have heard, but there's a new medical drama coming to ABC. It's actually really cool. Monday night's called The Good Doctor. It's a story of a young man with autism. He has a savant syndrome. His name is Sean Murphy. He becomes a surgical resident at a very prestigious hospital. And this guy exhibits genius skills and is capable of seeing things in a way no one else can. It's his autism working for him. He's alone, though, in the world and unable to personally connect with those around him. He uses his remarkable gifts to save lives and challenge the skepticism of his colleagues. Character's unique medical conditions adds a dimension to this genre that's not been explored yet. I think this is going to be a great show. It comes from the producing team of David Shore, the man behind the drama House, as well as Daniel Day-Kim, who previously starred in Lost. Series stars Freddie Highmore from Bates Motel as Dr. Sean Murphy. Richard Schiff from The West Wing and Hill Harper from CSI and Homeland round out a diverse, exceptional cast. It's one of the most anticipated series of the new fall season. The Good Doctor premieres tonight on ABC with new episodes every Monday at 10, 9 Central, just after Dancing with the Stars. The Good Doctor tonight at 10, 9 Central on ABC.
One of the really exciting parts of working in recovery is not just seeing patients get well, but seeing them get, well, amazing and actually go off and become mental health professionals themselves. The field of psychology is vast. The need for competent practitioners has never been greater. So if you're considering this rewarding career, I suggest you consider the California School of Professional Psychology at Alliant University. I've known Alliant University for years now. I'm proud to have spoken at their events in the past. It was founded in 1969, boasts an alumni network of nearly 50,000 individuals working worldwide, and it's fostered many of today's mental health pioneers, authors, and advocates. CSPP at Alliant University hosts both on-ground and online programs in business psychology, marriage and family therapy, and clinical counseling. They also offer an APA-accredited doctoral program in clinical psychology that allows for specialization in child psychology, clinical forensic psychology, and integrated psychology. Their faculty is made up of industry leaders, and former faculty names include the likes of Abraham Maslow, Carl Rogers, Viktor Frankl, some of the true fathers of modern psychology. So for more information on the School of Professional Psychology at Alliant, click the Alliant banner on my site or visit alliant.edu. That is alliant.edu.
I have another theory because this guy was saying to me, he said, you know, a lot of girls think they're mature for their age. I go, everybody thinks they're mature for their age.
Sure.
But it's your job to go, no, you're not. You just can't be because you haven't seen as many years as I have. But they like to teach. And I don't find that sexy. This one guy was saying that he enjoys that.
He likes trying to bring up a 25-year-old?
Yeah, he likes that she feels like she doesn't relate to her friends, and you know, the guys she dates, their apartments suck, and he likes being the guy with
the
really
nice. Yeah, he has to understand that's psychopathology he's responding to. Right?
That's what I think, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But what is it? Is it not pedophilia?
No, it's narcissism. It's just taking advantage of somebody, not really being able to empathize with them.
Now, does it have anything to do with how he feels about women his own age? And this could be men, too, if gay men and gay men. I'm just saying, like,
it's really more about...
It's about not being able to look at your own age?
Yes.
So you don't want to be reflected.
Right.
I think this hits men harder than women.
It can.
Because I think as I've gotten older, I'm more attracted to people in my age
yes,
set.
Yes, me too.
When I was 20, if you show me a picture of a 40-year-old guy, I'd be like, ugh.
Yeah.
And yeah. I liked boys.
And that's how it should be.
Yeah. And then, you know, I do have a thing for, like, I don't mind a short, skinny guy or whatever. But, like, I mean, I was just in Williamsburg living, and I could tell the difference in ages. Like, I feel young, but I saw boys. I literally could be their mother.
Yeah.
I'm 20. If I had a kid at 21, he would be 22 right now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Ooh. So it's like, ooh.
Right.
But maybe
it should give you a creep. So
maybe because it's the maternal thing. Like, they came out of my vagina, and now they're coming back in. Like, they should, you know what I mean? Like, I could have given birth to someone your age, and now you're coming in the wrong way. Like, it's weird.
It is weird. But I'm not sure it's all about the vagina.
No, but that's just my little...
That's your little thing.
That's my little tap
dance
about it.
Put that in your statement, please.
Thank you. But I just feel like I'm just obsessed with this, and I feel like I'm just thinking about it as I get older.
Well, again, men, we can be so screwed up. We can be such a mess. If we really can.
I know.
Yeah. If we're just gratifying our whatever urges, we can be animals. Straight up.
Well, just like if everyone would... That's why I feel as I get older, like, I think something's happening with men in society and women. I think I'm. You heard it here first. Breaking news.
Yeah.
In 10 years, most women over 35 will be asexual. 100%.
Asexual or just not interested in men?
Not interested in men, but not by choice. Like, it will be a brain evolution.
Okay. And so
a new kind of woman evolves.
Will some of them be interested in intimacy still?
I don't think it will dawn on them anymore because it's so unavailable to them. They'll have intimacy with friendships.
Well, might they be gay?
No, not gay. No. That's but what's going to be so strange.
So it'll be just female friendships.
Female friendships.
I'm already seeing this happening.
That's what I mean. I see it happening, but I actually think the brain will evolve differently. Do you think that could happen? Or that doesn't happen
fast.
That quickly.
Yeah, too fast.
But so something is happening where it's like, you know what? Like because my sister was saying that her friend is like, you know what? I think I'm done. She's 50.
Yeah.
And she's like,
and
I'm done.
Yeah.
She's divorced. And she's like, I'm not that horny that I need to bother.
Yeah, and my wife has said this a couple times too. She goes, you know, once women get over that whole reproductive thing, the baby thing, that it's like men aren't that interesting anymore. Unless you get to keep the hormones restored, by the way, though. If you keep – I've observed this now with hormone replacement therapy.
Oh, got it.
If you keep normalizing the hormone levels, magically things go along the way they should.
Well, I mean, I think if you're already in a relationship.
Right.
But if you're not, important. I can see where you just go
– forget it.
Okay. I'm not even going to get in one now.
Yeah.
And – I think that can be sad.
It is sad. And I think because it's a part of yourself you're losing and just dismissing.
Yeah.
I don't like that necessarily.
No, but I see it going
there.
But
what I do see is women focusing more on intimacy rather than sexual and physical intimacy. They just see intimacy generally is what they're interested in.
Oh.
And so they do get more interested in their female friends.
Yeah. Because
they can provide that much better than the male friends for the most
part. Well, there's a book about that and how like no one talks about it because it's you know, we've been socialized if we're too close to a woman. There's a really interesting book, terrible name, it sounds trite, All the Single Ladies by Rebecca Traister. She's a genius kind of author of a feminist. She writes a lot of like articles for New York Magazine, but this book is this dense thing about how single women are running the culture, that's changing the way real estate's done in New York to this and that and race and blah, blah, blah. But her thing was...
That's true.
Yeah, back in the old days, women were seen as bonding. And so there was something that happened culturally where they were socialized to start competing for men, and you were called a lesbian if you were too close to other women.
Yeah.
And so then there was a shame that happened if you're too close to another woman. So now we have this thing where, you know, when your best friend gets married and she's not the one you could go to Mexico with anymore, have a girl's trip, like your heart breaks. It's a breakup. But you know what? Even when am I gay? I'm not going to. We get that way the way that men do. Like, hey, John, you know, I love you, man. Like, we get that way with women. Like, we feel and we experience and we're intimate, but we could never be like, I'm heartbroken you got married or you moved. You can't say that. It's too gay or, you know, too, like, get a life.
Yeah,
kind of thing,
yeah.
You know?
It seems pathetic on
it
some level.
Pathetic.
Even though it doesn't, even though it's not.
It's not.
It's profoundly real.
It's profoundly real, but I do think there's going to be a split. I tell you, I will be interested to see, you heard it here first, 10 years women are going asexual. Younger and younger.
What?
You better hope you're wrong.
Well, you'll be fine. It's younger and younger. So now it's like 50. I think it'd be 35 and older. Women are just like, I'm out. I swear it's happening.
Well, what if men step up and do a better job of maintaining themselves in relationships? See, I think a lot of it is that the women just get like sick. They're like burned out.
I don't think it's men's fault necessarily. I think the biggest problem might be the wanting younger women thing. There's no one to have if they're all going for younger people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's just going to be like a dying out thing. That's, I think, evolution. I would love to see the world in 200 years if men keep going for younger women.
No, see, I think men are going to step up and evolve.
That'd be great.
I think that's,
and they don't have
happen.
To act like women or be pussies
or
whatever.
No, they just need to be available for relation, for being adult and being in a relationship.
But I also think like women aren't like obsessed with relationships either, but the chase, because men are so like over there freaking out that we're like, hey, it makes us chase. And like, we don't even want it that bad either. Like, if everyone just calm down.
Yes.
And just be normal.
Yes.
Like, sometimes I just feel like men don't have very much to do is my point. They don't have very much to step up. It's not as daunting as it seems. It's really
well,
not.
But you've painted a picture of them going for these younger women and just being interested in, you know.
Not all, but, you know, the ones that are,
yeah.
I feel like they're pushing women to evolve without them.
Yes.
And so.
Hey, listen, African-American women have been dealing with this for a long time.
Really?
Yes.
What?
And with there's a book out by a black law professor at Stanford. Help me. It's called the African-American Marriage Crisis or something. Which is that the African-American women have been doing exceedingly well academically and professionally, and the men are ending up in prison and are unavailable, and the ones that are excelling professionally are in extreme demand, and there aren't that many of them relative to the numbers of African-American women that are excelling. And so they're experiencing the same kind of thing.
What, like no time for anything except work?
No available black men.
Oh, no available.
That are at their level.
Got it.
It's called
Is Marriage for White People by Ralph Richard Benz.
That's him. Yeah, Is Marriage for White People.
I mean, yeah. It is.
So. Yeah. Well, but the black women want it. Are you kidding? They're fine, but there's not enough. The market and the black men that are excelling are so in demand. They're like, I'm not getting married. Screw it. I'm going to just keep screwing around. That's great.
What it is. Supply and demand.
Yes.
That's also it.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm telling you, I won't be here in 100 years, but.
Yeah, I think it's going to get – I'm not as fatalistic. I think it's going to move the other way eventually.
You know we're supposed to be in the feminine whatever right now. You heard of this?
No.
I don't even know what any – I'm just telling you what I read.
Yes.
Someone sent it to me.
Yes.
I'm not even an astrology person.
Go ahead.
In 2011, something named Regulus – I don't know what that is. Is it a star? Who knows? That moved out of
– Sounds like your period.
My period is Regulus. It moved out of some masculine sign into the feminine, and the eclipse burst it even harder. So after 2,000 years of male energy astrology reigning, we're now in a feminine thing.
How long is it going to go for?
2,000 years.
Oh, geez.
Now, it doesn't mean women are in charge. It just means like maybe more what you're saying, like men will embrace the feminine. I don't know what I'm saying.
Well, I've always said that it's healthier when we go with women's instincts. Relationships are healthier. Our child rearing is better.
Yeah, we've been given instincts.
We're not so violent and aggressive and stuff. And so to the extent that we sort of defer to your instincts, I can always consider that a good thing.
Yeah, we've
got... So maybe that's what this is.
We've got some knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But I feel like men feel picked on, and it's like...
We do feel picked on, and that has to stop.
And with women...
Because we feel emasculated really easily.
Yeah, we don't understand... Like, we are just... You know, we intellectually understand, but we don't understand how it feels. So we're like, so when someone says, I'm just like, I have so much faith in a guy.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, you can do it. And they're like, no, I'm crying out here. Like, I can't step up in you're fine.
We're simple, but we're a little delicate. We're a little bit delicate many times.
I was listening to an Elvis song driving today, and I had this epiphany. I'm sure many women have had it before me, but it was a song about how complicated this woman is and he doesn't understand her. And I always growing up, it was so cool to be thought of as a guy. You're not complicated. And it's like, maybe we're not that complicated, but the men don't understand us. But it's not because we're complicated. It's because there's some communication missing or something. Like my goal, like
no, you're girls, complicated. You're using more of your brain. And you're more connected to your body. You're more connected to the emotional
world. Is that complicated?
For us, it is because we are like sort of disconnected from that.
I think a lot of women think like, oh, okay, so then I have to uncomplicate myself.
Oh, no.
That's not what we mean. Stupidity.
No, we don't mean that. We just mean understand us. Please understand us. We're simple.
We can't.
Just don't expect anything more out of us.
That's the thing that we go, oh, forget it. I'm just going to live with Leslie.
All right, with that, we got to wrap this thing up. So I do want to meet Leslie one of these days.
I'd love to meet her, too. I just made her up.
Your partner, your life partner.
She's my life partner.
Where can people see you again?
On tour, baby. Come at me, America.
And listen for the podcast that Jen and I did on your podcast. It's called?
I Seem Fun, the Diary of Jen Kirkman podcast. And normally, it's a solo podcast, but I interview people I find fascinating.
And it was a pretty interesting podcast we did.
I know. I'm very vulnerable.
Yes, and I enjoyed doing it. I appreciate your joining me here and for opening to me and letting me be a part of that podcast.
You really helped me today.
Good. All right. And we'll hopefully help you guys, too. We'll see you next time.
For call-in times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's D-R-D-R-E-W Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the swinging sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. All conversation and information exchanged during the participation in the Dr. Drew Podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction. Nothing on these podcasts supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the podcast or drdrew.com.